Greetings, and welcome to the Pegasystems third quarter 2016 earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief question and answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Ken Stillwell, CFO and Senior VP of Pegasystems. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Pegasystems Q3 2016 earnings call. Before we begin, I'd like to read our safe harbor statement. Certain statements contained in this presentation, including but not limited to, statements related to future earnings, bookings, revenue, and mix of license revenue, may be construed as forward-looking statements as defined by the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. The words expects, anticipates, intends, plans, believes, could, estimates, may, targets, strategies, intends to, projects, forecasts, and guidance, and other similar expressions identify forward-looking statements, which speak only as of the date the statement was made and are based on current expectations and assumptions. Because such statements deal with future events, they are subject to various risks and uncertainties. Actual results for fiscal year 2016 and beyond could differ materially from the company's current expectations. Factors that could cause the company's results to differ materially from those expressed in the forward-looking statements are contained in the company's press release announcing its Q3 2016 earnings and in the company's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission, including its quarterly report on Form 10-Q for the quarter ended September 30th, 2016, its annual report on Form 10-K for the year ended December 31, 2015, and other recent filings with the SEC. Although subsequent events may cause the company's view to change, the company undertakes no obligation to revise or update forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise, since these statements may no longer be accurate or timely. With that, I'll turn the call over to Alan Trefler, Founder and CEO of Pegasystems.
Thank you, Ken. I'm pleased it was a strong Q3 overall. Q3s generally provide limited visibility given vacations and schedules, especially in Europe. I had spoken about Brexit on the last call, and I'm pleased to say that concerns have not materialized, with the exception of currency, of course. I'm pleased to see the continued progress we're making towards having less lumpy quarters, despite the inherent lumpiness of this business, even in the face of those currency headwinds. Those currency headwinds cut a couple of points off of our results, but nonetheless, our year-to-date non-GAAP license and cloud revenue grew 18% year-over-year to $239 million. Our year-to-date non-GAAP total revenue grew 15% to year-over-year about $552 million. While we continue to make investments to leverage growth opportunities, we are committed to improving operating leverage as we scale long term. Which brings us, I think, to a recapitulation of our strategy. To summarize, continuing on focusing on delivering the world's leading business process management and customer relationship management software, enabling our clients to realize dramatic business agility and positive business outcomes by combining insight, action, and the ability to evolve that our software makes possible. We're looking to broaden our market reach through both digital marketing and through our expansion to the Global 3000, and this continues to gain traction, as I'll talk about. We focus on giving choice in how clients acquire and deploy our technology, which is a message that is resonating. We provide value to clients, whether they're in growth mode or efficiency mode, depending on business and economic conditions. Our software can help customers retain and expand their customer base through our Customer Decision Hub and/or case management to create differentiated experiences. Yet, at the same time, we reduce costs by improving operational efficiency using our business process management, our case management, and now the robotics we can offer as a result of the OpenSpan acquisition earlier this year. In the strategic column, we have four major initiatives, two product-focused, two go-to-market focused, that I'm going to touch on. First, from a product perspective, we continue to enhance our unified model-driven platform, Pega7, which is the foundation on which our applications are built and a critical competitive differentiator. It's truly a platform for digital transformation. It provides a unique capability in case management, BPM, and real-time decisioning, which coming together bring that insight and action to the fore. And this distinctive positioning of having one platform continues to gather industry recognition and delivers for us and our clients. You know, unlike our competitors, this unique architecture gives them flexibility and choice in deployment. Customers can move seamlessly between Pega Cloud, which we host and take care of, third-party clouds, private clouds, hybrid clouds, or traditional on-premise. And the ability to accommodate clients' individual business needs, not just as they exist today, but as they might exist in the future, is, we think, far superior to stuffing clients on some multi-tenant SaaS system. And we're seeing organizations understanding how digital transformation itself may transform in the future as really hungering for that level of flexibility and choice. Also, I mentioned OpenSpan. Less than 6 months after the OpenSpan acquisition, we launched our robotic automation as fully unified with Pega 7 and our CRM applications. It allows us to apply OpenSpan's 15 years of machine learning expertise to Pega clients. And it's a unified offering that really snaps in beautifully with our business process management capabilities. Because what we're really happy about is this isn't just about letting a bunch of robots loose on a client. It's about plugging them in to a way of thinking about finishing and completing work, which is, we believe, a highly differentiated and far better way to think about both automation and robotics. Now, regarding industry recognition, this August, we were designated as a leader in the Gartner Magic Quadrant for Intelligent Business Process Management Suites. A leader, we've been recognized in this report every year since its inception in 2006. And they evaluated 15 vendors, and we were really pleased with the way our picture looks, shall I say. But last year, in another very attractive picture, we were also named a leader in the Gartner MQ for BPM, platform-based case management frameworks, for the second consecutive year. And, you know, I think when you realize that we have one architecture that brings these two capabilities together, you'll start to see that we can do end-to-end things that our customers and our competitors find both appealing and threatening on a retrospective basis. Now, we continue to deepen the capabilities of our customer engagement applications as part of our strategy number two, which is to create really well-finished marketing, sales automation, and customer service capabilities. We're focusing to make these solutions of greater value to buyers to improve implementation speed and increase ease of use. And, you know, once again, this is where having a unified architecture approach really means we can provide a seamless way to handle a service request or when a customer is on a service call to advance a sales opportunity and have every interaction advancing the customer journey using our Customer Decision Hub, which is part of this always-on customer brain at the center of our technology. With lots of companies hyping AI and artificial intelligence solutions today, I just want to remind you that our Customer Data Hub brings tremendous decisioning intelligence to our CRM apps, driving it and really supporting true advanced capabilities. It continuously learns from data and interactions to power experiences across an enterprise in real time and at scale. And this is real. This is not a vision or some bolted together Frankenstack of purchase products. We've been doing this for years and have customers with real and dramatic results who come and talk about them at PegaWorld, not as things that are going to be, but it's things that are fundamentally changing their business. So being the only CRM where sales, service, and marketing are unified in this environment versus an integrated environment where they're just kind of glued together means you don't have to write API code integrations between apps, and lots of things that are hard in other businesses as they scale up become easy in ours. So being able to guide customers and being able to provide this capability so you don't have to train people, that's something we do far better, we believe, than any other of the competitors. And regarding the apps, you know, we have also been announcing significant enhancements to many of our application areas. Most recently, for example, our customer lifecycle management and Know Your Customer applications, which provides the unified solution for managing both corporate and personal banking customer journeys as banks seek to bring on new customers. And in a world where organizations are worried about the process through which they open accounts, being able to bring decisioning and process to that point of engagement, we think is especially appealing and especially important. You know, we've also been able to work into our product important advances with some of our partners. So, for example, we worked with our partners to add advanced cloud-based capabilities such as voice recognition, SMS messaging, and click-to-call functionality throughout our customer service platform using software from Spark and Tropo, which are Cisco companies that we partner with. We actually demonstrated these at Cisco Live and at our recent healthcare summit. So being able to bring together a unified platform with important partner solutions, now available in many cases on our application store inside our platform itself, is really one of the things that makes, I think, our technology special. We're also, by the way, seeing we can bring this technology into markets that are really quite new and get leverage. For example, we fairly recently have been entering the German market for healthcare. And I'm pleased that DAK is a new healthcare client that has bought sales automation for the statutory healthcare functions that are German-specific. And SBK, which is the largest company health insurance provider in Germany, also jumped on board and being able to create these rule-driven, regional specialized solutions really gives us, we think, a lot of power and a lot of sticking power in going after important new functions and markets. The third strategy talks about go-to-market. And from a go-to-market perspective, we're really looking to increase our view and our management depth about how we're going to do digital buying and improve awareness to bring prospects and clients to our technology. We recently hired our new CMO, Tom Libretto. He started about a month ago, and he's building on great marketing momentum we've developed over the last 2 years. Tom's had over 20 years deep B2B and B2C marketing and CRM experience at some of the world's most recognized brands, and he most recently comes to us from J.P. Morgan Chase. And I think that you're going to see wonderful things coming out of the next 6 months as Tom and the team are energized to really drive a true digital marketing agenda. And earlier in the quarter, we added Diane Lettingham to our board of directors, who's a leader in Bain's customer strategy and marketing practice and a senior partner in their telecom, media, and technology practices. She's very experienced at helping companies create and implement high-impact growth strategies, and we're excited about what she's going to be able to do with us. In our fourth area of strategy, we're also investing in broader market coverage, deeper within our enterprise accounts where we go to market vertically, and with the addition of sales forces focused on opportunities in the Global 3000. We're also continuing to expand the ecosystem, partners, to support our growth. This quarter, we continued across the board to add new logos across verticals. And I'm going to call out a few. We're seeing great traction in the public sector globally as government entities focus on modernization, working to improve efficiency, reduce costs, and enhance service. For example, the state of Vermont is now using Peg on the Cloud to deliver their next-generation licensing platform for the Office of Professional Regulation, which is responsible for enforcing 44 different professional occupations across Vermont. And in a very, very different sort of use case, the U.S. Marshals Service is doing an agency-wide modernization project to create modern digital business processes for case management, prisoner management, fugitive investigations, and court security management. I'm hoping to never personally have one of my records in their system, I'm happy to say. But not just in America, but globally, the Dutch Ministry of Economic Affairs, our first work with the Dutch government, is using us to be able to support health inspections and other functions from a supervisory perspective. And moving to another continent, the Australian Bureau of Statistics is developing data collection systems for business and household surveys. So once again, we're seeing really interesting government use cases, which I think is fascinating and also, I think, going to be very promising as we go forward. We also see good momentum in our key target industries, and to pick out a couple of there, I would highlight, for example, Scotiabank, which is using the power of our agile delivery to increase their speed to market, delivering contextual next best actions to online and mobile channels, and we're part of the bank's overall digital transformation initiatives, having displaced another vendor and very, very quickly using our technology to drive broadly across the bank. And at a notable win at a very large telco, where we're in over 36,000 service desks, we're being part of a broad digital transformation, really looking to improve service and automate end-to-end customer journeys so that somebody can start in one channel, finish in another. The Pega vision, if there ever was one. I'm also pleased to say that the corporate markets team, though still small, continues to do well. We're pleased with the performance year to date and have brought in a variety of new logos, ranging in size and industry from Nielsen to Credit One to Hitachi to Bayview Financial. So these are all examples, I think, of how the growth in the business was pretty strong across the board this year and something we're looking to try to accelerate as we go into next year. We continue to grow the ecosystem, and we're doing it both by direct access to partners and also creating some new programs. For example, our new university program, which has run at 4 universities, and we're going to now put out to close to a dozen, to be able to train graduating seniors in Pega technology, both for our clients and our partners, to be able to pick up. I'm going to call out one final customer experience that I was excited about and actually blogged about on LinkedIn, if you guys want to look at. It's about a customer I visited recently also in Holland. It's Rabobank, which is the largest lender to Dutch businesses. They wanted to really launch an innovative, you know, fintech-challenging approach to how they dealt with small business customers. And they came up with the idea that if a small business could go onto their website and fill out a pretty comprehensive set of forms by noon, the next day they would meet with them and give them a thumbs up or thumbs down on a loan of up to 1 million euro. Now, I'll tell you, this is about 10 days faster than their competition and completely revolutionary. What I'm thrilled about is, you know, we're not their website, but when you go to that magic page on Rabobank, sitting right in the midst of that is a Pega system, directly connected end-to-end, to be able to help the right questions get asked, to be smart and contextual, and to really make this brilliant process work well. Very exciting to be able to work with clients like this. And we think that, you know, as you look at our website, you see the customer stories, you really see a rhythm of success developing across the industries that we focus on. So in summary, good Q3 and year-to-date results. We're really pleased with the recognition by clients and industry experts. And the work we've done to unify the OpenSpan products and people really has shown that that's already going to be a terrific, terrific merger and extension of our family. And we continue to be confident in our continued momentum and competitive differentiation. So with that, let me turn it over to you, Kev.
Thanks, Alan. Pega Q3 results reflect our momentum as we enter our busiest quarter of the year, highlighted by strong year-over-year revenue, license and cloud growth, progress towards achieving our full-year EPS guidance, and backlog growth from quarter 2 of 16 that is higher than any typical quarter that Pega sees in our Q3. Our strength in generating significant value for enterprise customers was evidenced by 2 license arrangements that we call whales in Q3. Both of these whales were term license agreements, which contributed to our backlog. To remind everyone, our definition of a whale is a customer software commitment of greater than $10 million. Based on our current currency exchange rates and our anticipated revenue mix for fiscal 2016, we're clarifying the approximate full-year impact of currency fluctuations that we mentioned in our Q2. Our top-line revenue should see currency headwinds of approximately 3% or $20 to $25 million. We have an approximate 50% natural hedge in currencies such as the pound and euro, as we do incur expenses in these currencies, which help to offset revenue headwinds. Given the visibility we had to the currency headwinds, we've done a good job of managing our costs to help offset some of the earnings pressure that could occur from a currency headwind. Our year-to-date growth of non-GAAP, fully diluted EPS of 32% is evidence that we've been successful in managing the bottom-line impact of this currency headwind. At the end of Q2, we highlighted some concern around the short-term impact of Brexit, and so far, the impact has been limited to the currency impact mentioned, as Alan said earlier. For the third quarter of 2016, we're reporting both GAAP and non-GAAP results. A full reconciliation of all GAAP to non-GAAP measures is provided in the financial tables of the press release issued earlier today and is available on the investor section of our website. As we've discussed in the past, quarter-to-quarter comparisons do not necessarily reflect the underlying momentum of our business, as the timing of a small number of large transactions and the mix of license types can significantly impact quarterly results. In our view, year-to-date results provide the most meaningful look at how our business is performing. As Alan mentioned earlier, we're very pleased to report that our year-to-date non-GAAP total revenue of $552 million, which is up 15% year-over-year. Foreign currency negatively impacted this growth rate by approximately 2-3%. Our year-to-date non-GAAP license and cloud revenue was $239 million, up 18%, also negatively impacted by currency. Year-to-date through the third quarter of 2016, non-GAAP recurring revenue, which includes maintenance, cloud, and term license, was 54% of total revenue, growing from 52% for the same period last year. I want to highlight that we offer our customers choice when making a technology investment in our software, including perpetual term and cloud arrangements. We have observed increased interest in licensing our product under recurring revenue models over the past few years. This trend is accelerating as we expand into the CRM space, where other vendors have established recurring revenue models as the norm. To highlight this factor, both of the whale deals I mentioned were multi-year term arrangements where revenue will be recognized over time. In fact, in Q3, four of our largest deals in North America, our largest arrangement in EMEA, and our two largest in APAC were all term arrangements. This trend can impact expected revenue in the near term, but with the long-term annuity stream from these arrangements coupled with our above 90% retention rates will drive higher recurring cash flow streams and better visibility in the future. We continue to expect that our business will shift away from perpetual license toward recurring license revenue streams of term and cloud. Although the timing of a small number of large value perpetual transactions would continue to impact our license mix in the foreseeable future. And I also want to highlight again that we are giving our customers choice as opposed to forcing or encouraging them to move to recurring revenue streams. Non-GAAP consulting services revenue year-to-date through the third quarter of 16 was $144 million, an increase of approximately 18% over the prior year. In the future, we expect to continue growing our consulting business, but at a lower rate, such as high single to low double digits, consistent with our strategy to have customers and partners deliver the majority of our implementation services. Looking at our geographic non-GAAP revenue split, year-to-date through the third quarter of 2016, the Americas, inclusive of the U.S., Canada, and Latin America, produced 65% of total revenue, while non-Americas international generated the remaining 35%. Approximately 14% of our total revenue is generated from the U.K. The geographic mix is impacted by the strong U.S. dollar compared to other local currencies. Turning to our non-GAAP gross margin, we finished year-to-date through the third quarter of 2016 with gross margin of 70%, up from 69% in the prior year. Non-GAAP consulting services margins year-to-date through the third quarter were 12%, up from 5% during the same period in 2015. The margin year-to-date through the third quarter of 2016 benefited primarily from two large projects for which all or a significant portion of the associated cost were incurred in the prior year, as we've mentioned in previous quarters. If we adjusted for this timing difference, our consulting services revenue would have been approximately 11%, consistent with our expected run rate of about 10% for full year 2016. Our year-to-date 2016 operating expenses total $318 million on a non-GAAP basis, an increase of 17% over the prior year. Our year-to-date non-GAAP operating margin improved to 13% compared to 12% for the same period of 2015. This improvement occurred despite currency impact, our continued investments in building our strategic apps, improved digital engagement for our customers, and increased expenses that we mentioned earlier related to our increased attendance at PegaWorld User Conference in June of 2016. In terms of other non-GAAP operating expenses, we've increased sales and marketing headcount by 168 year over year, the majority of which were in sales. We are pleased with the continued progress we're making to add sales and marketing capacity for broader market coverage. R&D costs continue to run at about 18% of revenue. We expect this rate of investment to continue through the remainder of 2016 as we continue to enhance our leading Pega 7 platform and expand our application offerings. Turning to earnings, on a year-to-date basis, we posted $46 million of non-GAAP net income. On a per-share basis, our non-GAAP fully diluted net income was 58 cents per share, compared with 44 cents per share through the third quarter of 2015. Moving on to backlog and our balance sheet, we compute license and cloud backlog by totaling two components: deferred license and cloud revenue as posted on our balance sheet, and license and cloud contractual commitments that are signed but have not yet been recorded on our balance sheet. As a reminder, you can find detail of both elements in our 10-Q and a summary table in our press release, both of which were filed earlier today. We finished the third quarter of 2016 with $420 million of total license and cloud backlog. Backlog grew $27 million from the end of Q2 2016 and $40 million from the end of Q3 2015. We're pleased with this momentum in a calendar quarter where we typically experience a reduction in backlog, and we've seen strong currency headwinds in the quarter as well. Adding two whales, as mentioned, both of which were term license agreements, certainly assisted in the backlog growth. From a cash flow perspective, year-to-date, the company has produced $9 million of operating cash flow within the quarter, leading to a year-to-date operating cash flow of $17 million compared to $55 million through the third quarter of 2015. We finished the period with total cash and marketable securities of $130 million. Year-to-date, through the third quarter of 2016, we repurchased approximately 1 million shares for $26 million. As of September 30th, we had a balance of $41 million available for repurchase through June of 2017. On headcount, we finished the period with approximately 3,800 employees, up 20% from September 2015. In summary, we're pleased with our year-to-date results through the third quarter of 2016. The fact that we were able to grow non-GAAP revenue by 15% and diluted EPS by 32% in the face of currency headwinds and a significant shift to term license arrangements is a true indicator of the business momentum. And with that, operator, we will open the call to questions.
Thank you. We will now be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Our first question today comes from Steve Koenig of Wedbush Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my question for Q3. If I may, I'm curious to know your thoughts on will the bookings result how does that translate into, you know, relative to your guidance, which I know you don't reiterate, but could we look for kind of a higher probability of making that number for the full year, or kind of unchanged sort of view on, you know, chance of making that number? How would you characterize that? And then I'd also just love to get a little bit of color on those whales, what industries, and were any bookings related to the U.S. Census deal instrumental in the quarter as well?
So I'll talk about a couple of those things. So, you know, first of all, you know, historically we've pretty much eaten backlog or been break even with backlog through the first three quarters if you go back and just look at the last several years. And we're pretty pleased that in Q3 we were able to actually make up some of the shortfall we'd experienced in the first half. Still means the fourth quarter, as is traditionally true, is obviously very, very intense. But, you know, relative to sort of historical norms, you know, we were pretty happy with the way Q3 looked. though that doesn't mean there's not an enormous amount of wood to chop between now and the end of the year. In terms of the whales, we don't normally go into a lot of detail about their composition, but they were, I would say, in some of our traditional spaces that you would expect, and the census was not reflected in one of the whales.
Great. Thanks, John.
If I may do a follow-up, curious to know kind of your view on the evolving competitive landscape in CRM. You know, we know you've been bumping a little bit more into the multi-tenant SaaS vendor that, is dominating kind of the package, the SaaS space, if you will. Is that trend continuing, and how are you faring in those competitions? Is that normal for you guys to bump into them? And more broadly speaking, when it comes to CRM, who are you competing with most?
Well, so, look, if you think about what our strategy was a couple of years ago, we decided we would just take the business and very forcefully steer it into the front office by building out finished apps as opposed to complementing what people did, which is historically what we've done. And, you know, I'll tell you that we've steered into that front office pretty hard and darn well, and I think, you know, we're competing with the guys you'd expect us to compete with, that's Salesforce and Microsoft, and we're routinely doing it. And we've got a terrific story about a unified platform, about choice, about doing things that are good for the customer. You know, the thing that's a miracle in the multi-tenant SaaS world is that these guys are such brilliant marketers, and frankly, they truly are, that they've, you know, convinced customers that running a multi-tenant cloud environment is in the customer's interest. Now, that's only true if the customer is like a 50-person company, because frankly, that's the only way they can afford it. But once you get up to having several hundred users of a system, there's no real advantage, no advantage at all, frankly, to the client to being living in a world where his stuff can't be personally encrypted, where it's got to be in one of these multi-tenant databases with governors to prevent the tenants from crashing each other's parties. So, you know, that story about the you know, cloud as a virtual private cloud, coupled with the story that you can bring this in-house, we see as enormously powerful. And I think that ultimately, you know, it's not just in-house, it's really, you know, how do you, as a customer, not become a slave to one particular SaaS-based cloud provider, but have the choice to move to whatever cloud makes sense. I think we've got a really strong competitive story, particularly since we've really only been hard in this business for a couple of years. So I'm really happy with our positioning, where we are, and, you know, we have reason to believe that we're on these other guys' radar.
Hey, Steve, this is Ken. I wanted to add one piece of color on your first question, just so that you asked a question about should we feel more confident or less confident with our full-year revenue guidance? I think the way to think about it is we don't know what the mix of our deals are going to look like in Q4. What we do know is that our Q3 had a larger mix of term deals, which is really fantastic for the long term of the business, and we were still able to achieve a pretty respectable revenue number. Naturally, if a lot of our deals in Q4 go the way of term, I think that you all understand what that does to short-term results. And the way to look at that is to look at a combination of revenue and our backlog, of course. And that's the way to think about our business. So I would just point back to that. I'm sure most of you get that, but just to highlight that point.
Yep, that's very helpful. Okay, thanks, guys. I'll leave it at that.
Thanks, Steve.
The next question is from Mark Scappel of Benchmark. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for taking my question. Let me start off by saying nice job in the quarter, especially on the license line. A couple questions on OpenSpan. Ken, starting with you, I was just wondering if you could give the contribution of OpenSpan in the quarter.
So we don't report OpenSpan separately, and quite frankly, it is integrated now as a product offering. However, we originally estimated that the contribution from OpenSpan would be approximately $20 million for the full year, and I think if anything, we are seeing more demand for OpenSpan than less. So we feel confident that OpenSpan will be a nice contributor for the year.
Okay, great, thank you. And then Alan, I was gonna, another question on OpenSpan for you, but I think Ken may have answered it a little bit here. But I was wondering if you could just talk in general terms about the kind of growth and demand you're seeing for the for OpenSpan's robotic automation technology.
Sure. You know, it's interesting because robotics have become pretty hot, though if you actually think about it, a lot of folks are positioning things in a pretty weird way. Our positioning here is unique. If you go take a look at the other market, guys in the market, if you want a couple of standalone robots to go throw in some part of your operation, we can do that. However, now that OpenSpan is beautifully integrated and connected to our BPM and case management, those robots can actually now have an audit trail that describes what they do. If they need to talk to some things through robotics, and just so folks know, robotics in a lot of ways is kind of simulating keystrokes, kind of like think of it as a, you know, fast non-human typist going in through the front door of a system. You know, anything that's pretty sophisticated is typically going to merge some of those robotic capabilities with things that you'd think of as more conventional system-to-system interfaces and to a multiplicity of systems where you really want to make sure things are in sync. You know, typically you're not just going from an Excel spreadsheet into one system. You know, typically you're going between systems and doing that sort of stuff. And that's a scenario in which our BPM heritage and roots and the OpenSpan technology just are beautifully complementary. And so we're seeing customers who are just looking for robots to try to make things go faster, now understanding they'll get a lot more leverage if they think of the robots as being part of a process as opposed to standalone entities. So I think it's turned out nicely strategically. I think the teams get along together really well. And, you know, we're really happy with it as a nice complement to what we had done historically.
Great. And then one final question here, and it has to do with your marketing initiatives. You know, in the beginning of the year, the company, made a conscious decision to kind of ramp up the marketing spend and what you're doing in the marketing area. And I was wondering if you could just talk again in general terms about, how you think those activities are going, and maybe just give a couple of examples of what you're doing in that area.
Sure. So I think that, Tom is putting together the plan for next year, and he's got a very good team, and, you know, they're bringing their thoughts together for what we want to do. But there's no question in my mind that Pega historically was just meaningfully under-marketed. You know, if you think about it, we were a company that really originally only sold to a couple dozen of the world's largest firms, growing that to, you know, maybe 500 or 600. Now that we are talking and to more firms and getting more visibility, we're seeing companies that we never would have talked to. I mean, think of firms like Nielsen, you know, and firms that absolutely have these needs, but that we're not in one of our highly specific target markets. And so we're going to continue to invest and really work to get both more visibility, but also make it easier for customers to digitally buy. What that means is that they need to be able to find the right stuff on the website, that we need to have the materials out there, both directly and through our partners, to make it so that the engagement that is now expected makes sense. So, you know, we're I think very rational folks in looking at how we do this, but I'm pleased that the commitment we made to marketing was a wise one and one that we want to continue.
Great, thank you.
The next question comes from Greg McDowell of JMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Great, thank you, and it's wonderful to see backlog grow in that manner. Couple questions. The first one, I guess with respect to Steve's earlier question, I'll push a little bit harder on the whales. And if you could just, I know you don't want to get into too much detail on industry and such, but if you could just talk about whether these were sort of new logo wins or existing clients, were they competitive wins? Was it more BPM or CRM or case management focused? Just any additional sort of details you can provide would be helpful, I think.
Well, so, you know, I think both of these would be characterized as being a combination of something new and something old. And so, you know, it's not uncommon for us to having had a success with a client to do a significant amount of follow-on business follow-on business with them.
And then, Ken, one for you. I, a lot of us are coming off some recent earnings calls where there were some similar term license commentary and maybe more explicit fears on operating margin compressions as a result of moving to term licenses. And I was just wondering maybe longer term how we should think about that mix in 2017 and 2018 and sort of at least being somewhat careful with our models, you know, taking into account the mix shift to more term licenses and the impact on margins. Thanks.
Yeah, so it's a good question. So just the simplest way that I can explain it, Greg, is that if you think about a company that's going through a rapid shift from a perpetual to a term model is going to have margin compression in an extreme way. A company that is doing it in a slower manner, naturally, you probably may not see much margin compression or notice it. I think the thing that we've highlighted for the recent past is to really pay close attention to our backlog, because it is difficult to connect the meaning of our non-GAAP operating margin without thinking about the amount of term license and when that's coming in. So I think what we've seen over the last few years is that our recurring revenue has grown, you know, from in the 40s up now to 54%. And with that, our margin has been, you know, non-GAAP operating margin has been at that kind of 15% range. And I think it's easy maybe to speculate that that's a performance issue, but the reality is it some of that is related to revenue not matching expense. So that naturally is probably something that you're commonly hearing. I think the important thing to think about is that as the term revenue continues to grow, you get through that trough. And we have not seen a real trough in margin. We have not experienced that. What we've seen is margin that has not grown to the extent that the street expects it to grow. But I think what's important is the amount of recurring revenue that we have is growing, and I think that's a really important thing for us to make sure that you understand, because that's part of the reason that our margin hasn't expanded over the last few years. And I just don't think we've done a tremendously good job of maybe being transparent or clarifying that to you.
Got it. Thank you. That's helpful.
The next question is from Matthew Galinko of Sidoti. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking my question. First one on the Rabobank deal. Alan, you called out, your strength in decisioning and being quite a bit more effective than who you were going up against there. So, could you maybe talk a little bit more about that win, why, you ended up so far ahead of your decision and competitors, and maybe just talk about it more broadly. I think you touched on this earlier, but just, a little bit more broadly in decisioning, why, you're coming out ahead.
Yeah, so, one of the things that we do, which is interesting, and by the way, this relates to one of the whales where we got a major follow-on piece of business, is that sometimes we end up being in a head-to-head match with decisioning. And I think that's good. I think the fact that our real-time decisioning is rated by Forrester as absolutely best in class in terms of capability, the fact that if we've got a client who just wants to figure out what the right product is to be most suitable or most appropriate for a customer, that we're absolutely best in class in that, I think that's fabulous. But the stuff really comes together when you don't just want to make a good decision. You actually want to operationalize it. You actually want to fulfill it. You actually want to be able to take the loan application, make an initial, decision in the system, but then run that through some loan committee and actually take some steps and then, onboard a customer. That's where the decisioning really marries up with case and process, because the decisioning wants to lead to an outcome, a case, as it were. Our parlance. And the process is, how do you execute this? how do you do it in conjunction with the customer system. So, you know, we are, I think, differentiated purely in decisioning because the engine is so powerful. But if you actually want to move beyond intellect to actually put some muscle into it, that's where, you know, you got to go put some Frankenstack together with the other guys. Or you got to do it only in their environment as opposed to being able to make it work both in a cloud environment and with your systems up close and personal. That's where we really shine. And I think that's a pretty significant and sustained differentiator for us.
Excellent. And then in terms of the wells you closed in the pipeline here, can you comment at all what the sales cycle is like? Is it, you know, what you would have expected it to be before? Is it, you know, picking up a little bit?
You know, I think the sales cycles in Q3s are hard to gauge because Q3s are just weird. You know, it's like until September, nothing much is happening, you know, in many ways. So I don't think that the sales cycles have really particularly worsened, though I don't have a statistical basis. That's just kind of being out there in the field. I will tell you there's a lot of activity going on for Q4. It's going to be frantically busy, which is, I think we think that's a good thing, right, Ken?
So, Matt, to touching on that as well, to your specific point to whales, I don't think that we anticipate that that closing a whale is any less or more intense in terms of the sales cycle. Those are big transactions, and so as you can imagine, they involve, you know, an adequate amount of sales activity. So I think our time to close on those is you know probably unchanged from
historical
history.
I would think so.
Fair enough. All right, maybe one last one for you, because you did call out government as a nice sector for you with some wins this quarter. So do you see any incremental investments you'll need to make in the coming quarters or year or so to get deeper into government? Do you feel comfortable with where you are? And do you see any need for investment, I guess, on the engineering side and product side or on the sales effort on either side, I guess?
So there's some things that are incremental investment. For example, in the federal government space, there's something called FedRAMP, and then there's something called GovCloud. There's some additional investment that we have been making to be able to support government-specific environments and practices. There are also some either, you know, government-specific or government-mandated audits that, you know, can cause, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to get done to demonstrate things. But frankly, it's not enough, I think, to really significantly move the cost needle unreasonably. The core product itself turns out to be extremely well suited to the government space. And, you know, I think years ago people would ask me what I was unhappy about, and one thing I said is, you know, I really don't think we're doing a very good job getting into government. You know, I was very candid about that. I'm obviously feeling a lot better now, both at the, you know, national / federal and the state and local levels. So we're pretty pleased. I'll just share, the state of California is a government client of ours, and one of the things that they did fairly recently is the California Franchise Tax Board, which is what does all of the corporate taxes, put in a Pegasystem with one of our partners to really help run a lot of the guts of the tax calculations. And we're so thrilled with the result that they hosted an event on their premises for 250 other workers from other government agencies to show off what they did. And we had some of the other government agencies talking about what they accomplished. And what I like about this is, unlike some of the other vendors where if you actually listen to the presentations, it's not actually clear what they did. Our customers, when they talk about it, tend to be really very specific and very tangible. And, you know, I think we're starting to see a really happy critical mass gathering in terms of these government organizations.
One additional comment, Matt, is that if you think about our partner ecosystem, that's very congruent with
with public sector as well, right? A lot of our partners actually have good public sector practices, et cetera. So the actual execution of engagements is really our ecosystem supports that vertical or that sector as much as any.
Got it. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Matt.
There are no further questions at this time. I'll now turn the floor back over to Alan Treffler for any closing remarks.
Certainly. Well, thank you, everyone. We're really pleased with the quarter and that the year is you know moving ahead really solidly, and it's thrilling to be able to report those customer wins and also, importantly, customer successes. I want you guys to know that we've got a lot of work to do, and we are working hard on your behalf. So thank you very much, everybody, and all the best from me and Kev. Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys.
This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect your line. Thank you for your participation.